Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Thanks to our sponsor, Villanova University. Villanova's Center for Church Management and Business Ethics offers educational programs for individuals in church leadership and administrative roles who are seeking to become better stewards of church resources by improving their business and management skills. Learn more at villanova.edu.
Now back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
And we are back. You're listening to America This Week. I'm Kerry Weber, along with Father Matt Malone, and we are speaking with Father Leo O'Donovan about the Triduum and art and entering into this holy season. And we invite you to join the conversation at 1-888-322-8465. That's 1-888-3-CATHOLIC. Give us a call and let us know the ways in which you are growing in your own spirituality, the way in which you try to enter into this Holy Week and to the Triduum in your own lives. And if you have any questions about this season, give us a call here. 1-888-322-8465. So, Father Leo, this Triduum has a lot of visual aspects to it. We have the veneration of the cross, we have the washing of the feet, we have, you know, the Holy Saturday Easter Vigil with candles and fire and lights. I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about how you think these beautiful symbols sort of enrich this Triduum season.
Well, it's probably the most symbolic, well, it's certainly the most symbolic part of the church year. The joy of Holy Thursday with ringing of bells, the Gloria sung again, is almost jarring after the long Lenten season. But the vestments are white. There is the incredible symbolism of the mandatum, the washing of the feet. And then at the end, the sacrament is taken out of the church, which I always find very moving. Mm. It embodies everything, the dress, the people who've had their feet washed, the procession, carrying the sacrament covered. And as we know, there are ciboria, which are as beautifully done as anything ever wrought by silversmiths. You almost hate to cover it, but the point is it's being retired until we celebrate Good Friday, which has an entirely different tone to it. It is so mournful, and churches are very inventive in finding a way to make the church look as though it's in mourning, as indeed it is, in memory, grieving. I'd like to say something, though, about a very important part of the Triduum, which is often overlooked, and that's the third day, Holy Saturday,
right,
which we find ourselves often getting ready for Easter, getting ready for the Easter dinner, getting ready for guests, maybe sleeping a little bit late since the day is generally a holiday for most people. But it is a very special day, which we overlook at our peril, I think, because it is so congruent with very fundamental experiences in our lives. And this is true of all of us, but especially for people who care for those who are grieving. It's a day of silence. There's no liturgy. The Easter Vigil properly belongs to the Sunday. There are, of course, opportunities to visit your churches. But it's a day of silence, a day of remembering that Christ lay in the tomb for 3 days, unvisited, unable to do anything, dead, which corresponds, I think, to the feeling many people have when they lose a loved one, or when they go lost in life, or when they have a child who's deeply in trouble, and there are no words immediately available to express how sad they are.
Yeah.
And it behooves us to enter into that experience with them and with the Lord, who has gone before us in such silence.
And it is, I've often said that I think that mourning is the loneliest place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is a way in which that is, we re-experienced that on Holy Saturday. And it's also the case, you know, for us, the next day is Easter. But this was not true for on the morning of Holy Saturday for Jesus' companions and disciples, right? I mean, this Friday was the end. It had all ended in a way that actually was not uncommon. Right? Mm-hmm. It ended in tragedy and death. And re-entering that space that, you know, where that they would have occupied in this interval is, mm-hmm. It tells us something really important. Doesn't it?
I think so, and I recommend to our listeners, to my mind, the greatest single image of this, in painting anyway, of the silence and grief and desperation almost of Holy Saturday is Holbein's painting in Basel, but painted about 1521, called Christ in the Tomb. Mm. It's very rare. We see paintings, sculptures, we hear music about Christ being taken down from the cross, being put in the tomb, arising from the tomb on Easter. But an image of Christ in the tomb, completely enclosed, is very rare. And this particular painting is gorgeous. The body is about life size. It is already decaying. The face is gasping. The hands are distorted. There looks to be no remnant, even memory, of life in the body. When Fyodor Dostoevsky went with his wife to the museum and discovered this painting, he had an epileptic fit. He found the image so distressing. And some years later, when he wrote his famous, wonderful book, The Idiot, Prince Myshkin, whose first name is Leo, I have a particular affection to this book, the prince is also an epileptic, and Dostoevsky has him go to Basel and stand in front of this painting, which had once affected him so profoundly. Dostoevsky was a deeply religious man, of course, and the prince stands in front of the painting, sees it, and says, "You could lose your faith in front of this painting." Well, I think taking time, giving yourself some time for silence and awareness of the time when Christ was in the tomb himself, is a tonic for us. It reminds us of how much a gift and how fragile that gift is and how close it can veer if we don't recognize and pray for the grace of the gift, how close it can veer to desperation.
And that makes me think of Pope Francis's message in his general audience today, which he talks about the fact that, and he says, at times the darkness of the night seems to penetrate into our souls, and at times we think there is nothing left to do, and our heart seems to have lost the strength to love. And I think it's such a vivid image of that despair that we can feel and that darkness that you're describing. And of course, he goes on to say that Christ lights up the fire of God's love, and this flash of light breaks that darkness and announces this new beginning. And I think it's so important to remember the need that for many new beginnings in our own lives as we continue in our spiritual journeys, and the fact that there will be periods of darkness, and that it does not mean that we have to lose our faith forever. It means that maybe we go through a period of doubt and we pray, you know, "I do believe, Lord, help my unbelief."
Yes. Undoubtedly.
What advice do you have for people that are sort of going through this time of darkness, maybe, and they're looking for this light of Christ in their lives? How do we love better?
The first advice I would give, and I've tried to follow myself, is simply to be with the person, to enter into the silence, and let them feel that you understand and share such grief. If you speak too fast and you say things that are comforting too easily, they'll be grateful. They'll know you're a friend or a pastor. They'll be grateful, but they won't be helped much. And we're tempted at times, if we want to be comforting, to say, absurd things. Well, it was better that he suffered because he imitated the suffering of Jesus. You might think that in a mystical moment, but for God's sakes, don't say it.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing, isn't it? Because in this moment when we are remembering the crucifixion and remembering the mourning of the disciples and our own mourning on Saturday, you know, I often think of Michelangelo's Pietà, right? With the, you know, this beautiful depiction of grief and sorrow. But you would never walk up to this work and be prompted to say, well, Mary, at least he's in a better place, right?
Right.
Or, you know, or he's no longer suffering, right? Or,
right.
You know, and you would never think to say that to the Pietà,
right?
And it's because now we know where these banalities come from, right? Mm-hmm. They come from a good place. People want to help, but it's... If we don't allow ourselves to enter into that experience of Friday and Saturday, then our joy is in some way diminished on Sunday, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So there's a blessed passivity. On the other hand, there's also outside of the Triduum a call to action, I think, which is most clear in the writings of liberation theologians like Ignacio Ellacuría, who, meditating on the cross of Christ, came to the marvelous statement, take the people off the cross, which Juan Segundo, his younger friend and a great theologian, has developed frequently. We need to react to the cross not only as a saving act, but a revelation of what can be done to people by malign and misguided forces, which should not be just taken for granted, but countered,
right,
and responded to, and should never be an excuse for tolerating violence and the abuse of people.
Mm. We are listening to America This Week on Sirius XM, the Catholic channel. You can join the conversation at 888-322-8465. We're talking with Father Leo O'Donovan about the Easter Triduum. And I would imagine that something that our readers and our listeners might be thinking is, this is a lot of church for 1 week, right? Particularly for Catholics who, you know, maybe faithful weekly mass goers.
The Easter Vigil alone is like a month's worth of mass.
Right. And so I have to admit, when I was growing up, it was not part of our tradition to take part in all of these liturgies in succession over 3 or 4 days. And, you know, we would maybe go to Stations of the Cross on Friday, and then we went to Mass on Easter morning. But there's real value in accompanying the church through these liturgies in this concentrated way.
It's a special privilege, I think, Matt, when you are either a sponsor or a friend or attend the Easter Vigil with somebody who's been through the RCIA and is entering the church formally on that night, or returning to the church from another confession. The people I've known who have been sponsors, and I have myself, experience the Easter Vigil in an entirely new way through the person who is going to enter the church, which is another indication of how graciously interdependent we are, and how we derive our faith through others, all embraced in the grace of God, but so vitally through others. It's if you're wondering, well, isn't that an awfully long service? Sit up front near the catechumens,
right,
who are about to be baptized.
Do the un-Catholic thing and sit in the front.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
I remember having a conversation with my brother once about this, and finally said to him, I said, you know, you really should go to the Easter Vigil and experience it. And the over Easter dinner, he then said to me, he said, you know, Matt, I was a little worried because when we started, the first lector got up and said, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And he said, oh my God, we're starting there? How long are we going to be here? But he said, but what happened to me was, over the course of all of those readings and all of these symbols and welcoming these people into the church, it's this interdependence that you're talking about. He said, I became aware that I was a part of something larger that was this enormous story about where we have come from and what God has done for us and what we are called to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've had the privilege of being a sponsor during the Easter Vigil and also serving at the Easter Vigil as an altar server as a young person. And both have really helped me to enter into that service in totally different new ways. And it's powerful to see how something that is such a wonderful tradition in our church can really affect us in different ways at different times in our lives as well. Is that the Easter Vigil you go to this year has that tradition in it, but it might speak to you in a different way next year or the year after that. And the power of the church's traditions to speak to us wherever we are. And I think that can be a really beautiful aspect of it.
And, you know, a lot of our traditions and certainly our art has come from places in Europe where they celebrate Easter Monday in a very serious way. It's a holiday. So is the Monday after Pentecost, and I don't know too many people who meditate on Easter Monday with gratitude that it is the continuation of Easter. They certainly think happily that they have the day off,
right?
But it is a sign in the culture, recognized by governments, that Easter is too much for us. It's
right.
Too full. And so it continues to Easter Monday in Germany, where I've lived, in France.
And in fact, it's a whole season, the Easter season.
Yes, that's right.
That Sunday inaugurates.
That's right. Which is longer, I like to say, than Lent.
Right, which is important. And that, again, comes back to the point that you made about how the Easter event is tied up with mission. And because he doesn't just rise from the dead. I mean, that would be a big deal in and of itself, right? But he doesn't merely rise from the dead and say, I have triumphed. He says, you are missioned in light of this experience and to carry this memory and to proclaim it to the world and all that that means, including the work of justice that this triumph points toward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think we see in the Triduum a reason why the church's liturgy and tradition has been such an inspiration for artists over the centuries.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there are, for the apparitions that are, the appearances of Jesus that are recorded in the New Testament, there are countless pieces of art. One that's artists are particularly fond of is Thomas doubting that Jesus rose when in the Gospel of John, when the other disciples tell him that Jesus appeared to them on the first day of the week, on Sunday night. He says, unless I put my hands into his side and into the wounds of his hands, I won't believe. A week later, John reports that he is with the disciples when Jesus appears. Well, if you're an artist like Caravaggio, you cannot resist painting this scene and having the disciple's hand go as close to entering the wound as possible in the side. But, of course, John does not say that he put his hand into his side. He falls in worship before Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a strong artist who can resist embellishing the text just a little.
Which is a way of kind of adding to the story, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Entering into prayer in an imaginative way, as St. Ignatius asks us to.
Mm-hmm. Indeed he does. So in any event, the show is, it's mainly the work of Donatello.
Well, it's a range of people, but the most pieces known by one artist are Donatello, and then some are attributed. But there are the pieces by Nani, who's very, very good. There are sculptures, small reliefs by Luca della Robbia, beautiful little pieces. And there are architectural models of the dome of the cathedral itself, the very models done almost certainly by Brunelleschi.
So do check out the show if you're in the tri-state area. It's at the Museum of Biblical Art, which is on Broadway here in Midtown Manhattan. That museum, of course, is sponsored by our colleagues at the American Bible Society. Father O'Donovan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Fun to be here.
And have a blessed Triduum.
You too.
thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.